Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Blood Red Bottom Line Podcast with the Liverpool Echo, with me, Dave Powell. Joining me today is a very special guest, someone I've been keen to get on for a good while now. It's George Pine. He's a titan of US sports investment. Co-founded Brewing Capital in 2015, a sports investment firm. Previously, president of Sports Media Entertainment at IMG, board member also, former chief operating officer at NASCAR. And you've been involved heavily in the sports industry, and you've seen many changes in the past few years, George. I mean, just explain a little bit about what you are, what Brewing Capital do, and kind of how you fit into the space, because you're not the traditional sports investment type firm in terms of investing in teams. It's more around the verticals that go around that.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. It's great to be here, and thank you for the opportunity. So Brewing is really a global investment company. Our portfolio company, we own 7 companies, and we have people on the ground in 16 countries, and we do business in 50. And we probably work with most major federations, you know, in the world. And, you know, we come at it a little differently in that we don't invest in teams and clubs. We invest in the business ecosystem around sports. And so and with more of a technology focus, so virtual signage, webs, apps, OTT, tech stacks, data, things of that nature. Why? Because we see growth in those areas that are exciting and that you can get good returns on. So it's been at it for about 30 years, and really enjoyed myself, and came from a family of athletes. So I'm a little different in that, you know, I come from the industry. I come from the pitch. I'm up from a family of American football players, and sports has always been a big part of my life. And I've been able to make a living doing something I love in an industry I love.
I mean, the changes. I mean, I was in New York last year and I heard you speak at Sportico, and even then it was a really interesting conference, because so much has changed in the sphere, certainly in terms of football, especially so much influx of US capital into the English Premier League, and not just the English Premier League, Europe as a whole, likes of Redbird, Clear Lake Capital have come in, etc. Team valuations, I mean, a lot of these things, it's predicated on success historically, but team valuations now continue to rise. I mean, I know Jerry Cardinal said it's kind of anti-Darwinian, that in terms of things can't always be in the cycle of going up forever. How do you view team valuations? Because at present, the view certainly from the likes of Haddad Iqbali, when he spoke at the conference last year, was very much there's a gap in between where the EPL is now, where North American sports is, obviously, because the top 10, I suppose, in terms of the most valuable sporting teams on the planet, are dominated by the NFL, NBA, and MLB. So did you see that there is that opportunity for Premier League sides to the biggest Premier League size to bridge that gap in terms of value?
You know, I mean, look, the Premier League is an iconic league. You know, you could argue the most popular league in the world. And so those franchises, the top franchises in the Premier League, you know, hold their own in terms of valuation. What I think in comparison to some of the American franchises, There are some distinct differences that put the Premier League at a little bit of a disadvantage when you comparing it to America. One, the media deals in the Premier League by law are shorter. And so the U.S. is able to lock into 8-10 year deals that give more certainty, that kind of underpin the valuation. I think the relegation that makes is a great part of the Premier League, but that also impacts the valuation depth of the number of teams that are valued. And then just the size of the American market provides a little more heft in some of the valuations. But, you know, look, Manchester United, other clubs are hot. Chelsea, highly valuable and on their own stand up with any club or franchise in the world. And quite frankly, as you know, the Premier League is consumed on a far greater basis around the world than any of the American sports. But the American market is so big and vibrant from a media side that I think that kind of props up those valuations a bit.
Is there an element of trying to bring the learnings from what team ownership's experienced in North American sport and try and bring those into the Premier League to find new ways of monetizing? Because at the moment we are the kind of the Premier League, historically for a long time now, has been capped at 3-year cycles for media rights deal. That's going to extend to 4 the next cycle. A small increase, but an increase nonetheless. Where do you see investors in terms of those who look to buy kind of majority positions in teams? Where do they see how they can affect kind of positive change? Because that'll be ultimately what it's about. It's not just a case of riding the wave. It's about how you can try and bring what works in the US and make it work in European football and the Premier League, I suppose.
Well, first I have to take up for Europe because most of my businesses are headquartered in Europe and most of my business is in Europe. So what I'm going to tell you is there's great European companies that can come to America, and that's really what Bruin does. I think what is attractive about the Premier League and also the other major football leagues in Europe from an American standpoint is that, unlike America, as a team owner, I'm really riding along with the league because everything's so centralized. And so my impact is really on the pitch or on the field. In the way that the Premier League and international football is organized, team ownership actually can make a bigger difference. You can make a bigger difference in the value, in the revenue stream, and in the performance of the club than you can in the American leagues. And so I think that's why American investors find the Premier League so interesting, because you have a set of rights that are really on you. And on your management, where in the U.S. it's a little more on the league as well as the club. So I think the decentralized nature of the revenue rights make the Premier League more interesting for investors, because the investor believes I can do more with that than I can somewhere else. And I've met a lot of investors that don't have a lot of confidence. So that this confidence you see in some of those investments, and let's be honest, those investments have paid off. I mean, the investment of the Fenway Sports Group in Liverpool is a home run investment, and other investments like that. So you've seen people have success.
It's interesting you mentioned Fenway Sports Group there, because the next 5 years, it's very hard to predict where we go with sport. I imagine for the next 5-10 years, a lot of things are going to carry on going on. How do you see sports investment playing out in the next 5 years or so? Because the need for capital for some teams is different. The need for Chelsea to raise money for infrastructure development of Stamford Bridge is different than what FSG are looking for in terms of a minority partner, maybe to bring new facets into the business and help grow that globally. How do you see the next 5 years panning out? Where do you see and how might the likes of Brewin Capital factor into that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, when I started Bruin 8 or 9 years ago, sports as an asset class was certainly not as developed as it is today. And I just see more and more and more people as investors coming into the sport. And I think that's not going to change. And why? I think if you go back 30 years and you look at team or club valuations, they've grown at double digit CAGR. And so It's there's very few things that grow the way the sports has grown over 30 years. And, you know, sports is pretty solid, too. And it's more recession proof. You know, people are still going to go watch their club on television. They're still going to go to the match. And so it's people have realized, hey, this is a really good investment class. So I think you're going to continue to see more and more investors. I think you're going to see more and more sophistication in terms of the lending and the structured equity. I just think you're going to see more and more. Why? Because there are very few asset classes that are as reliable and durable as sport.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do you think, I mean, I've heard it just described previously as some of the biggest clubs maybe pursuing the avenue of almost becoming mini Disneys, you know, becoming the rights holder and having a lot of kind of verticals within that. I mean, do you think that's something which is workable more so, I suppose, in European football potentially than maybe in some North American sports franchises?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think when you look at some of these brands, I mean, they're brands. And so what are the logical extensions of these brands? You know, when you think about real estate and other elements or media and look at media is going to continue to fragment. And so these incredibly attractive brands that people engage with are going to become more and more valuable in the media space. And they're going to be developing one-to-one relationships with the consumers and fans. So I think I would agree that there is opportunity to expand the offering as we go forward.
You touched on just before around the resilience, I suppose, of sport around it's a bit more recession proof. I suppose a lot of that was borne out through COVID as well. I mean, it was a huge shock to the world, and then obviously the sporting system. Would fans ever come back? Would the interest be as it was? Would the media rights deals hold up in the next cycles, etc.? And I suppose now as we're coming out of that. The proof is in the pudding, I suppose, in terms of it's shown itself to be enormously resilient at a time when you've seen some of the industries that used to pay good money to sponsor, to pay good money to partner with sports teams have suffered. Sport has still managed a way to survive and thrive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the last things. Like, if you're a fan, you know, that's one of the last things you're going to give up in a bad economy, right? You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, but gosh, I'm going to go watch my favorite club play. And that makes sense, right? And then, you know, and what's so special about the Premier League is that when you're a fan of a club, it's an expression of who you are, what you stand for, what your community means. And those are things that people aren't going to, that built up over generations. That's not going to go away. And that's hard to beat, you know? And I think as you look at media continue to fragment, people cutting cords and going direct, the clubs are going to be very powerful in that way. And they're going to open up all new ways to communicate and for fans to experience, you know, something they're passionate about. And that's different than anything else, right? I mean, everything else is a fad, even a great TV show, or it's going to last, if it's good, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, right? But it's not going to last 25 years, although I guess there's a few that might have. Some of those other shows, but unlikely to have that kind of passion that sport has. And that's what makes sport so special. And look, you never know what the outcome is. You have winners, you have losers, you have good guys, you have villains. You got it all. And every time in sport, when you think you've seen it all, you haven't seen it all. And that's what makes it special.
Be remiss of me on a podcast, which is largely focused on Liverpool, just to get your view on what the last 13 years of FSG ownership at Liverpool's looked like, because ultimately when they came in, it wasn't the market for US investment in the Premier League wasn't as maybe as bountiful as it is now. It was a bit more fragmented, but they came in. It's been run as a sustainable business, almost going against the grain of what has seen some teams propel themselves to the fore in terms of the Premier League. It's quite been, in terms of value growth, it's been quite a remarkable investment.
Yeah, no, look, it's been, they were kind of ahead of the time. They've also done a good job with the club, right? I mean, they've had success on the pitch. And look, they know what they're doing. They, when you look at Fenway Sports Group in America, I mean, I don't think the Red Sox, until they owned the Red Sox, had won a championship until 1918. I grew up in Boston, so the Red Sox didn't, their socks weren't even red. So, you know, they did a great job with that franchise, and they've done a great job with Liverpool on and off the pitch. And so, you know, I think they're kind of a standard of, in terms of an ownership group. Now they own an NHL team, and they have other investments. I think they've done quite well.
When I heard you speak recently, I think it was CNN, around Saudi Arabia, because obviously there's been a huge impact from Saudi, not before the Saudi Pro League, which was hugely impactful for the transfer window in Europe, as obviously the PIF invested in four of the biggest teams there in an attempt to raise the league and the profile of the league. Spending ahead of revenue, I suppose. And then we've had golf with the LIV Golf kind of merging with the PGA. We've had tennis. Paddle is another. I mean, that's a huge sport which is booming. And Saudi Arabia has made serious investments in that too. How do you view the approach of Saudi at the moment? Because it's, I suppose it's threatens to, obviously threatens the right word, but it's going to cause some fracturing, I suppose, of certain things which maybe were traditional in the sporting sense in terms of how they invest.
Well, I think, you know, if you take you have two issues with Saudi Arabia. One are kind of social and political, and I'm not qualified to talk about those. But in terms of an investor, they're disruptive, right? And they're investing in the business. So I think someone who's a disruptive an investor is probably good, because change, you know, in life, you know, in America, they say you're gonna die and pay taxes. And that's the only thing that you know that's gonna happen. And so change is inevitable. And so I think somebody who is investing in a business and investing to grow a business is probably a good thing. And I hope that the results are good. So the one thing you wanna make sure is that it's sustained, that this isn't something that's like a 3 to 5 year passing, that, hey, listen, we believe sports can impact our region, our economy, and we believe it's a game changer for us, and we're going to get behind it. In the end, I have to believe it's probably a good thing. It probably makes some people feel uncomfortable, but feeling uncomfortable is also a good thing too. So I'm hopeful that it's a good development. Time will tell whether it's a good development. I think the judgment will be, one, do they execute, right? And are they able to execute on the vision that they're laying out? And if they are able to execute, it's probably a good thing. If they don't execute, it's probably not a good thing. It's a passing fancy. So, you know, look, they're plunking down a lot of money. That's great, but they got to execute. If they execute, it's probably going to be good. If they don't execute, it won't be so good, in my view.
And change is often met with some resistance at start, isn't it? If you go back through the years, that's kind of a common theme. And looking at some of the other investments they've done, Newcastle United, I think people were expecting that to simply be throwing money at the transfer window and changing things very quickly. But in reality, it's the approach, if anything, has been quite cautious. It's been, and that maybe that points to how they may well approach the other investments. So these, you know, this may not just be a run to see who gets to the finish line first. It's a case of fathoming out and finding out the nuances of all these sports and how they work and the best way to achieve success over a longer period of time.
Yeah, you know, I've been at this for 30 years, and I've seen a lot of wealthy people come in and out of sport. And And no matter how much money you have, after a while, if you start losing a lot of money, most people don't like it. And so that's where I say that, you know, it's important for the sports industry, you know, that they're successful and they do it responsibly, because that means that that capital source will be there over a long period of time. So again, to me, this whole thing comes down to execution. Can they execute? As you point out in the Newcastle scenario, that they're probably approaching it responsibly and thoughtfully. And that's a good thing, right? So you want them to have a good experience, and you want the fans and the clubs to have a good experience as well.
The looking ahead to 2026 is a huge, from when I came, I've been to the States several times, but the first time I came in 2006, seven, I think it was, football, soccer didn't really register on the on the scale, I suppose, of anywhere near as it does now. Past year, I've been out a few times, and it's a real kind of step change. I mean, the MLS, obviously the addition of Lionel Messi helps in terms of global profile, etc. But everything around the league, also the interest in terms of European football, that seems to have heightened. And it all seems to be coming to a crescendo in terms of 2026, all arriving at the right time in this kind of market, which all the European clubs wanted to try and tap into for so long, now appears to be far more fertile, and more clubs put more and more effort in terms of trying to put down roots and attract new audiences in the US. I mean, is that something you see playing out?
Yeah, I mean, the US is, with the FIFA Club Championships coming in 2025 and the World Cup coming in 2026, it's going to energize, you know, soccer or football here in America. I mean, I'm sad to say I'm old enough to remember when the World Cup came in the 1990s, and it really did energize soccer here to a new level. Of course, it was at a very low level at the time. Now in America, you'll have clubs in Atlanta and different markets that are really drawing big crowds. And of course, Messi has been a phenom over here, and I think generally viewed so positively, which has given further momentum. So I think, you know, just in time, I was in Europe about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, people are starting to sense that the U.S. market, you know, could be vibrant in the MLS and also women's soccer as women's football as well. So I think the U.S. has potential because of the market, because of the changing demographics of America. I think all those things portend well for soccer or football, however you want to call it, here in the U.S. And then, you know, look, the Premier League television ratings here in the U.S. are fantastic. And so the Premier League and other European leagues or federations have opportunities here in the U.S. All of them, all the different federations and some of the clubs opened up offices. But I think in order for it to go to a next level, they're going to have to, which, as you know, politically is difficult to do, play regular season matches in the U.S. And I think that holds back the kind of, when you look at the U.S. sports go to America. I mean, I'm an American football player. I cannot believe the success the American football has had in London over time. And I think that American football is going to be very successful in Germany, but they're playing regular season games there. And so I think in order for the Premier League to take a little bit of growth, it would be great if they could play some regular season games over here, which, as you know, is very politically different in the world of football. But that holds it back a bit, but because Americans want the best, right? And the best league and the best football league in the world is the Premier League. So you would want to see that here. Or you'd love to see the Champions League, not an exhibition match, but the real matches. But that withstanding, I think, you know, you're going to see in America to become a very vibrant football market.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's probably borne out by the fact that my daughter's first request for a birthday is an Inter Miami strip with Lionel Messi on the back. I'm not too sure whether I would have expected her 18 months ago to be asking for an Inter Miami kit or anything like that. But it's the nature of the pull of Messi has been really quite profound. You touch on there about regular season games. That's something which has kind of been kicked around for the past 10, 12 years, maybe, in the UK. There's obviously a lot of opposition to that. We appear now to be moving towards a point where some common ground might be to try and reduce the pressure of the domestic calendar we have over here, which has a lot of cup competitions, and maybe find this extra game in the season whereby a game can be played overseas. Because there's, from speaking to guys at Liverpool, certainly the US market has been incredibly valuable, not only in terms of pulling in a new fan base, but also when it comes to merchandising and all those other facets of the business. So the LeBron James connection for Liverpool and Nike is impactful because it transformed them into a lifestyle brand, and then it opens it up to a whole new audience as well. So certainly for Premier League clubs, there's a reason why they kind of tour during pre-season in the US or Singapore or Thailand, etc. It's to reach these audiences. I mean, this, in terms of these things like lifestyle brands, I mean, so it's very much a kind of a from the FSG playbook, I suppose, in terms of finding ways to, you know, from what they know, certainly what works in Boston with the Red Sox, etc., how to make that work with Liverpool and the US and make them a brand. Because like the Yankees is in you know, across the globe, I think that would be the aim for any sports team, I think, to have that kind of recognition which arrives with you know, just by the trademark logo.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool is a global brand, right? And it's something that even if you're not a real football fan, something cool about it, something pulls at your heartstrings. What pulls at your heartstrings is the passion of the fans, it's the club, right? And so I think Liverpool is one of those brands that has a real global, it's recognizable global, but has really global prospects to do even more. And, you know, one other thing I would just say that, you know, Messi situation here in America appears to be so successful and so well received. I think it's a good example for some football players that are at the end of their career that we might find America as an attractive place to go versus other markets. I mean, the potential that Lionel Messi is going to have in America for the rest of his life is enormous, right? And then when he's not playing, he's going to be extremely well received here. And by the way, the same thing happened to David Beckham. I mean, I think Americans love David Beckham. He's got a positive view. So I think that model of, hey, as I get to the end of my career, where can I go and play? I think that's an interesting thing for other great players to think about until the MLS can really step up the compensation for the players and compete, right? They just can't compete with those other leagues at the moment. But it is a good place, I think, to end your career if you're a great player.
So are you fairly bullish about the prospects for sports, certainly for European football's continued growth in the US moving forward? Obviously, having heard Don Garber speak a few times, there's a heavy focus on making sure that domestic product in the US is continuing to raise up, and not just focus efforts and attention on kind of making the offerings from the UK or wherever else, or Spain, kind of even greater over in the US. But do you think there's still a lot more road to travel down that? Because for the first time in kind of broadcast history in the UK, the international rights outweighed those of the domestic rights for the Premier League. And that was, you know, I think the US market made up about 2 billion of that 5 billion overseas market. And that's that was for a period which was negotiated just coming out of COVID, where there was still some uncertainty existing previously around how strong would interest be in terms of fans. So I suppose the assumption would be that that would only grow moving forward. I mean, you're quite bullish around the chances for of the sports growth in the US continuing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the challenge is, the only challenge in the U.S. market is just the cord cutting and the change of the cable bundle really provided a real economic lift for the clubs and the teams, and what impact that might have on the short run. But in the long run, there's nothing like sport, right? And there's a scarcity of asset, and people love it. So I think long term, sport will be fine. Navigating the channel change here from going direct to consumer, right now it goes B to B to C, and it's going to go B to C. Navigating that change could be a little bumpy, but in the end, I think sport will do well because it's still going to be the only thing that gets big audiences and big passionate audiences, which are going to be harder and harder to find, and sport's going to be very valuable in that world.
Is there ever the temptation for yourself to move into to team ownership, or are you very much staying in your lane?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be involved with the team, but just because, again, I'm four generations of athletic participants. You know, my dad,
your sons as well, aren't they? It's
We love sports. It'd be kind of fun on a personal level, but I think unfortunately I am what I am, and I'm probably gonna have to stick to building sports businesses, which is good, and I'm having a good time with that. And I'll tell you, it's been a real joy for me. You know, we have people all around the world, and it's kind of fun to work in different cultures and different places. I did a Zoom last night. I had guys in Australia, I had guys in London, I had guys in New York, and it's fun and interesting and keeps me going.
There's few things more exciting than the space of sport, as it's ever changing, involves passion, heartache, joy, everything that makes the perfect tale. But thanks so much, George, for joining me today. Really insightful, and like I say, it's been really, really great to have a chat to you, having heard you speak several times and the insights you provide. So best of luck for the endeavors for the remainder of the year and moving forward, and thank you very much everyone for joining me today on the Blood Red Bottom Round podcast. That's me, Dave Powell, joined by George Pine. Hopefully see you again soon.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.